Good afternoon. This is Lloyd Carter. You're listening to Down in the Valley, the monthly show that focuses on water and ag issues in the San Joaquin Valley. We air on the second Friday of each month, so mark your calendars for next month. As usual, there's a lot of controversy about water, and there's a lot of water news in the papers and on TV, but I want to start with a letter to the editor of the Fresno Bee that was in the paper this morning. It struck me. It's by Jay Hubble of Fresno, and the headline said, "Blame the Land Barons." When we talk about farm workers being out of work because of the water shortage, we need to ask why their bosses, the wealthy land barons, did such poor planning for drought contingency. Let's put the blame where it should lie. The Delta smelt did not cause the scarcity of waters. The lack of dams did not cause it. The land barons have chosen a business model that involves welfare for the rich. Subsidies for water-intensive crops and taxpayer-subsidized water agreements for land their family predecessors staked a claim to when it was relatively waterless desert. The barons made bad choices and refused to adapt to a changing environment. As with other archaic business models that are collapsing all around us, it is the poorly paid workers who are most severely impacted. Smart farmers will adapt with new business models that utilize less water-intensive crops and support new cost-effective water delivery systems, like the restoration of the Tulare Lake Basin for water storage, rather than ravage the delta and our rivers and streams with costly and useless dam schemes. That from a letter to the editor in the Fresno Bee this morning by Jay Hubble. Food for thought. Which got me to thinking about the business model for the west side of the valley, which of course is suffering a major cutback in water supplies. Apparently the Westlands Water District is going, at this point in time, is going to get zero water supply. The Tulare Lake Basin of the west side, which is gets water from the California Department of Water Resources delivery system, is only going to get about 20% of its water. However, contrary to some of the claims you have, because we have a lot of commentary about how the valley's being cut back, the fact of the matter is that the senior water rights holders in the Central Valley, both the San Joaquin Valley and the Sacramento Valley, are going to get 100% of their water supplies this year, 100% for the exchange contractors, who are the growers to the north of the Westlands. The Fryant unit is actually going to get 85% of its Class 1 water supplies. So it, in fact, is a bad water year, but it's not quite as bad as people make it out. Now, one of the things that's been in the hue and cry over the lost jobs and the idled acreage, the figure that was used at the March 31st congressional hearing on the California drought was that some 400,000 acres of land could go out of production this year. And we want to put that in perspective. I got an email from a guy who did a little research through the California Department of Finance, which publishes an annual California statistical abstract on ag production, acreage, income, etc. In 2002, when the last U.S. Census of Agriculture was conducted, there were 9.3 million acres of land and farms in the main counties of the San Joaquin Valley: Stanislaus, Merced, Madera, Kings, Tulare, Fresno, and Kern. 400,000 acres is just 4.2% of that total acreage. It is also less than 10% of the 4.1 million acres of harvested cropland in the San Joaquin Valley for that year. So we're talking, and there's no doubt there will be some hardships, and there will probably be some government aid to alleviate those hardships. Now, Jay Hubble mentions the business model for the land barons, and of course not every grower in the valley is land baron. In fact, there's only a few, although the big growers control a lot of the acreage and the small farmers always struggle. I want to read something to you by Tom Birmingham. It's the Westlands Annual Report for 2004-2005. And Mr. Birmingham is the general manager of the Westlands Water District. In his annual report from 5 years ago, he says, quote, improved cooperation between state and federal water managers, the successful purchase of additional permanent water supplies, and a string of relatively wet water years have produced a sense of optimism and confidence among district farm operators. This confidence has translated into a very strong trend of increased permanent crop plantings in the district. Since 1993, the number of acres planted in trees and vines has more than doubled in Westlands to approximately 64,000 acres. In just the past 3 years, the number of acres devoted to permanent crops increased by more than 15%, while field crops declined by almost 8%. This trend, while good for farm incomes, employment, and the regional economy, has the potential to strain some of the district's water supply systems. Well, Mr. Birmingham was very prophetic there, because 5 years down the road, here is the situation in the Westlands. You can go to the Westlands Water District website and get their 2008 crop acreage report. I totaled up all of the permanent crops in the Westlands, which includes almonds, cherries, grapes, raisin grapes, table grapes, wine grapes, lemon trees, nectarines, oranges, peaches, pistachios, plums, pluots, pomegranates, prunes, tangerines, and walnuts, and it comes to just under 113,000 acres of permanent crops. Plus, there's another 11,000 acres of trees and vines that are not yet bearing. So they have rolled the dice in the wetlands that there would be a water supply would be available. And, of course, as we all know, the current water supply situation for the Westlands is zero. Northern California water, there are growers in the Westlands who have usable groundwater, and there are efforts being made to try through transfers to obtain some water supply. But nevertheless, you have the specter now of people who've invested great amounts of money in permanent crops, orchards, etc. And by the way, there are now over 70,000 acres of almond trees in the Westlands. They have no water supply, and they are in desperate straits. But anyone remotely familiar with the way that water is distributed in California knows is that the senior water rights holders have first choice for all the water that they want. There are growers immediately north of the Westlands who are getting all the water they want this year in Merced County and what they call the Delta Mendota service area. And some of these exchange contractors gave up their San Joaquin River water 75 years ago in exchange for guaranteed supplies of Delta water in all but severe drought years. Now, to publicize the plight of the Westlands, comedian Paul Rodriguez and some other folks who have formed the California Latino Water Coalition are planning a march next week, starting on Tuesday in Mendota and ending in at the San Luis Reservoir on Friday. And hopefully, they say they have invited Governor Schwarzenegger to meet with them on Friday at the conclusion of the march. They are trying to publicize the plight of farm workers and also the plight of farmers, because farmers without water cannot hire farm workers. They are, apparently it's a 4-day march. I don't know all the details. KMJ announcer Ray Appleton is going to join them in the walk, and we will see how many. Some estimates are there will be hundreds of people. Some estimates there will be thousands of people. We will see. And apparently they are after three things. One is they want to lift the restrictions of the Endangered Species Act. Two, West Side growers want more water pumped from the Delta. And East Side growers want federal funding for a new dam on the San Joaquin River upstream, 6 miles from Fryant Dam, a dam that could cost anywhere from $3 to $5 billion. We will see how that goes. and we will see how their march goes. There's obviously going to be some expenditure of public funds for security, highway patrol, sheriff's departments, to make sure that the march goes smoothly and that everybody is kept safe. So we'll see how that goes next week. Now, in terms of the drought, which is constantly in the news, some people say there is a drought. Some people say there's not a drought. There's only a regulatory drought, meaning that court decisions and decisions by state water officials to protect fisheries in the Delta are the real cause of the drought, although rainfall has been a little bit below normal. So I am looking here for a comment by Professor James Powell of Southern California, who has just written a book called The Deadpool. And he's talking about Lake Mead on the Colorado River. Once the lake level gets below a certain point, they can no longer use the hydroelectric generating facilities. So they're saying by the year 2015, just in a few years from now, they won't be able to pump any water out of Lake Mead because the lake level will have dropped below the pumping level, nor will they be able to generate any power. So Mr. Powell writes, in the West, water delusions have a long history. And he's talking about, you know, whether we need to build more dams to capture more water. And the fact of the matter is, he says, if we did build more dams, they might just sit empty because of climate change and global warming. Mr. Powell writes, let me point out, California reservoirs currently are in some cases below half full. To fill them and any new reservoirs will require surplus water. If we had any surplus water, the reservoirs would not be so depleted. Climate models show that because global warming will reduce runoff in an average year for the rest of this century, California will have even less surplus water than today. California would have to be extraordinarily lucky to fill existing reservoirs. New ones will almost certainly never fill. In the face of a permanent drought, more storage cannot even out the ups and downs of weather cycles. I am sorry to say that I think it can espouse a 20th century solution that will not work in this new century. The only case for more storage is the possible necessity to contain larger early spring snowmelt surges. So what the problem is, as Mr. Powell is saying, is that if we build more reservoirs, we may have to fill them with paper water. And paper water, of course, is what your state water board excels in distributing. I've said this many times before, but it bears repeating. The State Water Resources Control Board for the state of California has issued water permits for 8.4 times as much water as actually exists in the system in an average year. And it has issued permits for 3 times as much water as exists in the greatest water year we've ever had in the last 100 years of record keeping. So everybody out there that thinks they have a water right, all they have is an entitlement to a piece of paper. But the piece of paper says that there's water, which in fact doesn't exist in reality. Okay, and discussing this thing about drought again, you know, whether what is the new normal in California and what do we define as a drought? There was a water symposium this week in San Diego, and one of the speakers was John Coleman, who is a weathercaster in San Diego, and he had some very interesting things to say. Let me read a little bit of his remarks to this water symposium this week in San Diego. He asked the question, is there a drought in California? His answer is yes. At this time, Southern California is classified as abnormally dry, and the Central Valley and Northern Sierra are listed in moderate drought. There are 3 smaller areas in the northern part of the state. that are classified to be in severe drought, but none of California is in either of the two higher categories of drought that would constitute a water crisis. Those are extreme and exceptional drought years, and we are a long way from either one of those. Somebody asked Mr. Coleman, is this the worst drought ever in California history? He responds, not even close. And there is some evidence that the claims of even moderate drought are overstated. Here are some of the statistics. The 15-year average for rainfall in the critical Northern California watershed areas are not at all indicative of drought. The American River watershed area average for 15 years of rainfall is 102% of normal. The Sacramento River watershed area rainfall is 77% of normal. The Stanislaus River watershed area rainfall for the period is 96% of normal. At this time, the Sierra snowpack averages 80% of normal. Last year's Sierra snowpack was normal. The only problem with snowpack was in 2007, when the snowpack was only about 30% of normal. Is this the three-year? If this three-year record is enough to create a catastrophic drought, we should all move out. Then what is it about the drought that makes such a dire threat to our water supply? Meteorologist Coleman responds, periodic drought is clearly a regular part of the climate of California, and 11 droughts averaging 2.5 years in length have occurred over the last 160 years. The 5-year drought between 1929 through 1934 was the longest, and the 1976-1977 drought was the worst drought year or years on record in California. So, very interesting. He also adds a little history here. Paleoclimatologists tell us there have been two basic climates in the history of our planet, ice ages and interglacial periods. The last ice age ended 12,000 years ago and an interglacial period began. Warming set in and the huge continental ice sheets began to melt and humans and thousands of other species began to thrive. A pleasant climate regime unfolded. This is nature's global warming, relatively minor cooler periods and warm-ups as the sun cycles come and go. But on the whole, life has been wonderful, and our civilization has developed and flourished. Okay, enough about drought. I want to talk about the other hot issue. And by the way, I should point out that we are supposed to have a ballot measure next month in May to save the budget. Several proposals backed by the governor and the legislature to get us out of our current financial bind in California. Very controversial proposals which involve raising taxes. And the public opinion polling so far shows that every one of the proposals to, quote, fix the state budget may go down to crushing defeats. The taxpayers, I don't know what's going to happen, if we're going to go over the cliff on this or what, but we will see. Anyway, one of the things that they have been talking about in Sacramento also was putting a water bond on the May 19th ballot for $10 or $15 billion. And, of course, the controversial parts of a water bond would be whether we need to build two big multi-billion dollar dams in California and the peripheral canal, which is soundly supported in the San Joaquin Valley. Agribusiness definitely wants the peripheral canal because it will avoid all of the problems at the pumps, they think, and with the Delta smelt, and allow them to get good clean water from Northern California without going through the Delta's toilet bowl. However, there was a commentary in the Sacramento Bee yesterday by Mark Wilson, who is a farmer. Mark Wilson co-manages Wilson Farms and Vineyards in the Clarksburg District of the Delta. He served on the Stakeholders Advisory Group of the Delta Vision Blue Ribbon Task Force and was appointed by the governor to the Delta Protection Commission in January 2008 as an agricultural production representative. So remember, as I read his remarks here, Mr. Wilson is a farmer. He's not a radical extremist, big city environmentalist. He's a farmer. He writes, quote, the recent viewpoint a recent column in the Sacramento Bee by Jeff Neitlinger of the Metropolitan Water District and the Northern California Water Association's Don Zay, which apparently ran on March 20th, purported a consensus around a peripheral canal as the means to, quote, help the Delta recover. And former Metropolitan Water District Executive Tim Quinn's letter, also on March 20th, present a one-sided view of a multifaceted situation that affects Delta residents in the entire state. From co-managing a family farming operation in the Delta that dates back to 1922, I am gravely concerned that the plans being made to benefit water exporters, that's us folks down here in the valley, we are the water exporters, would negatively impact the people, economy, natural resources, and ecology of the Delta. George Orwell would grimace at the claim that a canal built through five tributary rivers in the Delta, thousands of acres of prime farmland, a national wildlife refuge, American Indian burial sites, migratory corridors, and other sensitive resources, and that significantly reduces fresh water inflow into the Delta, somehow helps the Delta. A canal does not create any new water and is first and foremost a new northern diversion point for those with contractual rights to Delta water. The canal would secure better quality water for out-of-watershed users and potentially avoid some of the endangered species problems plaguing the pumping of water from the South Delta. Yet this would be accomplished at the expense of the Delta watershed and long-standing beneficial uses. I'm skipping ahead here. I won't read you his whole column. But his point is that little is known about the effectiveness of the so-called proposals surrounding a peripheral canal. One of the things they want to create, habitat restoration, new marshes on working farms, et cetera, et cetera. He said little is known about the effectiveness of these activities to avoid, minimize, or mitigate take of listed species like the coho salmon and the Delta smelt, which is what a habitat conservation plan is supposed to do. Pointing to restoration projects of little-known benefit that will certainly harm existing ecosystems and economies is also a farce. We need to address a host of problems, including rising sea levels, seismic risks, earthquake risks, water pollution and invasive species while protecting endangered species, improving water quality within the Delta, sustaining agricultural economies within and outside the Delta, all the while providing a sustainable water supply to a growing population. It is no small task, and it has been called a wicked problem. So, I have tried to point out, although I get shot at a lot, that it depends where you're geographically located in California as to your view. Of course, here in the western San Joaquin Valley, we want to get more water and as much as we can from Northern California. Apparently, forgetting that people in Northern California do not share our view, and they are the counties of origin for where this water originates. And certainly, Delta farming interests do not want to see a peripheral canal because of the damage that it may do to their farming operations. So like I've said many times, this isn't about farmer versus fish. It's about upstream farmer versus downstream farmer. And actually, it's even more complicated than that. It's about inside the watershed farmers versus outside the watershed farmers. Now, the irony in all of this is that Fresno County, of course, 75 years ago, we lost our beautiful river, the San Joaquin, which now flows in the Fryant-Kern Canal, 75% of it, down to Kern County and Tulare County. So I have said many times regarding the plight of the Westlands Water District, the solution is to they deserve and need a share of the San Joaquin River, and that's where the San Joaquin River should be flowing. I also want to take a minute, we're already almost out of time, to point out that in all the massive coverage that the Fresno Bee and some of the local TV stations have given the plight of the farmers and the farm workers, I haven't seen any mention of the fact that for the second year in a row, The commercial salmon fishing industry has been canceled for the season, throwing thousands of fishing families out of work. Now, this is due in part to the massive pumping of water from the Delta in excess of what the Delta can take. In other words, the Delta has many problems, and one of them, at least according to a federal judge, is the excessive amount of pumping. It's not just the Delta smelt, which one letter writer to the Bee yesterday called a trash fish. I wonder if that same reader would think salmon are a trash fish. So, you know, the provincialism and the parochialism of folks here in the San Joaquin Valley, these water issues in California are real, and they're important, and they require a statewide perspective, not just rooting for the home team. And so what I expect out of the news media is some kind of balanced approach, and not just constantly giving, you know, one small part of the picture. We've only got about 3 minutes left. Let me see if there's one other little item I wanted to. Oh, I don't see anything in the local media about the city of Fresno engaged in any kind of strict water rationing or conservation measures. Here, if in fact the city of Fresno is worried about its farmers, let's all take our belts in, those of us who are urbanites, and reduce our water usage. And let me tell you what they're doing around the rest of the state. The Metropolitan Water District, which is the large wholesale purveyor of water in Southern California, is curtailing water deliveries by 15% to urban users. Here in Fresno, we have unmetered water. You get to use all you want for a flat rate. And, you know, the farmers have a legitimate complaint that the city dwellers need to make sacrifices too. So let's see if the community is going to respond. Okay, we got one more minute here. I want to give you some numbers. This is from San Diego again, and it's by the numbers. 30% of California's water needs are met in an average year by groundwater. 30% groundwater, 70% surface water. 40% is the minimum percentage of the state's water demand met by groundwater in a drought year. So as we all know, for those areas in the California, not just the San Joaquin Valley, but anywhere that ordinarily rely on surface water from rivers that won't get it this year, they're going to be pumping and depleting our aquifers. And if you're aware of the long-term curve of groundwater usage in this valley, we're pumping our groundwater banks dry. You've been listening to Lloyd Carter. This is Down in the Valley. We'll be back next month on the second Friday of the month at 3 p.m. You're listening to KFCF 88.1 FM. Thanks for listening. See you next month.